intro.
The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard on corners in town, like a cancer that's silently spreading. There's an unspoken fear we're on our way down. We must take America back, Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
We're back. Second hour of the National Intel Report on this Friday, 20 April 2018. You know, Mr. Thompson has been blowing the whistle. You know, let's make all this very simple. The CDC proved the mumps, measles, rubella vaccine caused autism. Then they threw that proof right out in the trash. And as of 2014, these figures haven't been updated for 4 years that I have in front of me. But autism cases in this country, 1,084,000. And that's of 2014. People's lives being destroyed. And for the quest of money, there is a special sort of hell for these people. And I'm not so sure that, class action suits, as the gentleman Dennis said in the first hour, you know, he was talking about the Fed Reserve and the IRS. I think this could possibly be done against the CDC, because nobody is going to stop this. Everybody's getting their palms greased. And nobody's going to turn on each other, because it's going to blow everything up and everybody's going to go to jail. This was sent to me by a gentleman. Thank you, Mr. Schwartz, for sending this to me. The Politics of Agriculture. And I've never had an opportunity to go through this. And what better opportunity than today? This was done by James Spurnaeus, I think his name is pronounced, and Carol Valentine. And they say that the politics of agriculture is one of the most fascinating stories in the past century, bar none. Well, maybe the vaccinations. The political machinations of how agriculture was transformed gets lost in the noble task of pointing out the harms of modern the agriculture ills, such as pesticides, herbicides, GMOs, depleted soils. However, in this writing, we will explain the politics of agriculture in brief fashion, because knowing how powerful forces shape us in the first step is the first step toward personal liberation. We say personal because the odds of population rising up and defeating agribusiness are slim. It is beyond frustration to know technology exists today where nutritionally sound foods without pesticides or herbicides, GMO and other bad practices could be raised with a bare impact on the environment. Every person on the planet Earth should have clean food and water, without exception. Now, what happened changed society economically, politically, and culturally. People whose very lives were tied to the land were displaced, ending a rich history of food cultivation. Food and culture are inextricably linked. Once food control was wrested, so went the culture. We hope this knowledge will force us to wake up and act positively. If one person wakes up and does something constructive, well, then it's worth it. Eating organic, non-GMO, grass-fed animal foods can be expensive, but it's vital to minimize the panoply of the toxic burden we face. Sorry, I had to read around a coffee stain there. As we will explain, politics has more to do with the fact that we must pay more for healthy food versus junk than economics. There is no free market in agriculture, like it or not. Taxpayers subsidize junk food and political power that directly suppresses our ability to eat, drink, and breathe clean. Let's get down to the basis of this. Let's imagine what should be. Not what is, but what should be. Think of a place in the world where pesticides and herbicides aren't used, let alone GMOs, where a full spectrum of minerals and nutrients nourish the soil, or soilless methods such as hydroponics are used, where animals are fed those foods or graze on clean grass and are not subjected to antibiotics, hormones, or confined in cages, where water is clean and when the air is not polluted. Where is this place? Nowhere on earth. But we can close our eyes and imagine such a place exists. We can visualize ourselves drinking clean water, eating foods full of nutrition without contaminants. Even though we have marketed supplements since 1985, we realize if this utopian place existed, we likely wouldn't ingest all the supplements we now offer, some, but not all. But now we must return to the ugliness of reality. Powerful financial interests using government force took locally managed agriculture to multinational control in America and in much of the world. They even made a name for it. They called it agribusiness. This, in fact, not speculation theory or conspiracy talk. F. William Engdahl wrote an informative book on the subject called Seeds of Destruction. We do not sell this book, but highly recommended it. It's available at globalresearch.ca and their online store. Engdahl wrote Seeds in 2007, and so much has happened since that confirms his thesis. In the USA, we can't even have proper labeling of GMO foods. In 2017, our government is stalling on a lame attempt to force food producers to label GMOs, even though much of the developed world has labeling laws. And here in this country, folks, truth in advertising, I think, would cover it. But this is how low the U.S. rates. In Seeds, Henry Kissinger is quoted as saying, "Control the oil and you control the nations. Control the food and you control the people." Now, some may quibble whether Kissinger actually said this. We the people are controlled by food monopolists. Engdahl writes that Kissinger was in the employ of the Rockefeller family, who are well known to have dominated the oil industry by creating a virtual monopoly of all phases of production. The business term is called vertical integration, which is a nice way of saying all aspects of oil were controlled by the Rockefellers. Now, Seeds describes how Rockefellers went from oil to agriculture step by step. One of the first things they did was to create the term agribusiness to brainwash the masses into thinking that without them, agriculture would be haphazard and lead to massive starvation. Agriculture, prior to their takeover, was largely independently run. Many small farmer families lived off the land and sold excess goods on the market. This was part of the culture we mentioned in our introduction. Worldwide, in Mexico, Argentina, India, and other countries, the agricultural tie to culture was more intact prior to the takeover because these countries didn't industrialize as fervently as the U.S. American agriculture practices in the pre-Rockefeller takeover era were not perfect, but agriculture was in the hands of family farms. Some cared about the land and others didn't. Now, farming was hard work and subject to many whims, from the inclement weather to other factors, but at its worst was nothing compared to what is now agribusiness. Now, a vital part of farming worldwide was the practice of seed collection, which was recorded in the Old Testament. Seed collection simply means that seeds from harvest were preserved for future planting. These old practices got scuttled. To the detriment of the independent farmers, the planet, and our health, the shift started with the advent of modern fertilizers, as Engdahl explains. In the aftermath of World War II, with Germany's IG Farben, a bombed-out heap of rubble, American chemical companies emerged as the world's largest. The most prominent companies, DuPont, Dow Chemical, Monsanto, Hercules Powder, and others, faced a glut of nitrogen production capabilities which they had built up at U.S. taxpayer expense to produce bombs and shells for the war effort. Any of this sounding familiar? Aluminum? Dumping in water supply? Now, Engdahl states an essential chemical for making bombs and explosives, nitrogen was a prime component of TNT and other high explosives. Nitrogen could also form the basis for nitrate fertilizers. The chemical industry developed the idea of creating large new markets for their nitrogen in the form of fertilizers, ammonium nitrate, for both domestic and U.S. agriculture, and for export. Now, Engdahl explains the nitrogen fertilizer industry was part of the powerful lobby of the Rockefeller Standard Oil circles, by which, by the end of the war, included Dow Chemical, DuPont, and Hercules Powder, among others. Now, the global marketing of the new agrochemicals after the war also solved the problem of finding significant new markets for the American petrochemical industry, as well as for the grain cartel, a group of four or five companies, then including Cargill, Continental Grain, Bunge, and ADM. The largest grain traders were American, and their growth was a product of the development of special hybrid seeds through the spread of the Green Revolution of the 1960s and 70s. Agriculture was in the process of going global, and the Rockefeller Foundation was shaping that process of agribusiness globalization. Now, this so-called Green Revolution had nothing to do with green, as in nature, but rather the green, the U.S. dollar. But it was a revolution of sorts, a takeover of the agriculture from plant to a chemical industry, leading us to sickness, death, which so coincidentally has cross-ownership with big oil and agriculture magnates. Or magnates, I should say. Now, Rockefeller family power had a plan in mind. John Davis was the assistant agriculture secretary under Eisenhower, who left D.C. to become a professor at Harvard Graduate School of Business. Davis wrote in the Harvard Business Review in 1956, "The only way to solve the so-called farm problem once and for all and avoid cumbersome government programs is to progress from an agriculture to agribusiness." Davis and Ray Goldberg, a professor of business at Harvard, joined Wassily Leontief, who was then mapping the entire U.S. economy in a project funded by the Rockefeller Foundation, according to Engdahl. Now, vertical integration, as Engdahl explains, was reintroduced in the 1970s as a means of consolidating the agriculture industry. Engdahl laments that a few in the 1970s either forgot or simply didn't know that hard battles were fought to get Congress to outlaw vertical integration by giant conglomerates or trusts, such as Standard Oil, in order to prevent them from monopolizing whole sectors of vital industries. Now, Engdahl explains, the person who first called the deregulation of government controls and privatization well before Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, or Margaret Thatcher was John D. Rockefeller III. In 1973, he published The Second American Revolution in the book, and in numerous public addresses, Rockefeller called for the deliberate, consistent, long-term policy to decentralize and privatize many government functions to diffuse power throughout the society. Well before that, however, Davis and Goldberg had begun to industrialize specific sectors of the American agriculture into agribusiness, through vertical integration, ignoring antitrust laws, and then using the input-output approach to identify the entire production and distribution chain. The Rockefeller family used the words free market and privatize as a ruse to dominate the agriculture sector, resulting in one of the most cynical nightmare scenarios imaginable, as we will soon discover here. Now, Engdahl continues, the first result of the collaboration between Davis, Goldberg, and Leontief was a project to industrialize the Florida citrus industry. The control of small citrus farmers soon gave way to large national orange juice processors such as Sunkist, who dominated prices paid to farmers through control of distribution and processing. Now, Engdahl explains their next target was to develop a strategy for the industrialization of the U.S. wheat to consumer chain as well as the soybean market for animal feed. As the government, step by step, removed regulatory controls on agriculture or on monopoly, the vertical integration of food industry accelerated. One of the classic American examples of vertical integration occurred at the turn of the 20th century. In the meat business, Engdahl describes how five major companies, Armour, Swift, Morris, Wilson, and Cahady, I think that's pronounced, were accused by the newly formed Federal Trade Commission of trying to monopolize all the nation's food supply in the 1920s. Engdahl explained how the five companies had dominated the purchase of livestock by controlling major stockyards, terminal railroads, livestock credit, market news media, and sites for potential rival packing plants. Furthermore, they had used their domination to force out new competitors who had been cartelized, if you will, the remaining market among themselves, illegally. They controlled the retail level by owning refrigerator transport cars, cold storage warehouses, and severely reduced competitor market access. Not content with all that, according to the government investigation, the Big Five meat packers also controlled the market for substitute foods by buying or controlling them. Monopolizing meat production in the 1920s, as bad as it was, makes what happened to big agriculture seem like child's play. In the past few decades, the independent family farm businesses were either gobbled up or driven into bankruptcy, only to be bought for pennies on the dollar. Engdahl states that as government regulations, food safety standards, and monopoly laws were systematically loosened, especially during the 1980s, the Reagan-Bush era, agribusiness began to transform the face of traditional American farming in ways so drastic as to be incomprehensible to ordinary consumers. Profits soared from agribusiness while the family farmers lost their shirts. During this period of prosperity for the rich, Engdahl says the family farmer gradually became a contract employee responsible only for feeding and maintaining concentrations of thousands of animals in giant pens. He no longer owned the animals or the farm. He was effectively becoming like a feudal serf, indentured through the huge debts, not to a lord or a manor, but to global multinational corporations such as Cargill, Archer Daniels Midland, Smithfield Foods, or ConAgra. Now, family farms saw return on equity go from 10% in the 1970s to only 2% a year by the end of the 1990s, according to a study by the Senate Agriculture Committee in 1993. But annual returns to stockholder equity for industrialized food processing rose to 23% in 1999 from 13% just 6 years earlier. The number of U.S. farmers dropped by 300,000 from 1979 and 1998. So in other words, from 79 to 99, well, 79 rather, to 98, well, that's less than 20 years. The number of hog farmers or hog farms, for instance, decreased from 600,000 to 137,000. While the number of hogs sold increased with factory farming practices. This soft warfare not only broke independent farmers, but also compromised health of person and planet, as we'll get into. Let's take this break. I'm not going to take any phone calls until I finish this. All right? Who am I talking to? The audience or you, Mike? Okay, figure it out during the break. All right, we'll be back. What goes up?
must come down.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on. And learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Treating farming like a factory, these agribusiness characters took animals off grazing fields and stuffed them into concentrated animal feeding operations. CAFO for short. A great way to give more profits for shareholders, CAFO keeps animals in small confined areas from birth to slaughter. Never seeing daylight, never allowed to lie down, animals develop severe foot and leg problems, creating madness in the sows, the cows, including barb biting and senseless chewing, according to Engdahl. Up to 10% of cows and 28% of chickens died from confinement, according to the USDA. But it was cheaper to let caged animals die, they dubbed it a loss of inventory, rather than actually take care of animals. Engdahl points out that the agribusiness paid off Congress for an exemption to cruelty to animal laws. The amount of waste created by CAFO should be treated as an environmental hazard to water supplies and air quality, but under George W. Bush, the EPA repealed a rule that held livestock owners liable for damage caused by animal waste pollution. Prior to this, agribusiness attempted to skirt regulations by hiring contractors to raise their animals. Engdahl explains that the EPA dropped the requirement that would have forced facilities to monitor groundwater for potential contamination by animal waste, which often seeped into the earth, leaving communities vulnerable to potential dangerous drinking water supplies. The EPA had refused to change the allowed levels of which livestock operations met the definition of CAFO, with attendant pollution limits despite repeated lawsuits. Factory farms produce more than 130 times the ways that humans did, or some 2.7 trillion pounds of animal waste a year, channeled into lagoons that leaked, ruptured, or overflowed, killing fish and other marine life, spreading disease, and contaminating community drinking water supplies. Now let's take a moment to reflect on the past several paragraphs. It's beyond disgusting to have these factory farming practices crush independent business by completely skirting any sense of law. How could agribusiness get away with eliminating cruelty to animal laws, which is absolutely required to run factory farms? How could agribusiness get away with polluting land, water, and air with dangerous waste products, a staple of factory farms? If we lived in a just America, where all are told we follow the rule of law, factory farms would have never made it off the ground, so to speak. You don't get to poison water, air, and land in a supposedly free America, which claims we have law enforcement and judicial systems to protect property rights and punish violators. Regulatory agencies, notably the EPA and the USDA, were clearly compromised by political clout. The man on the street thinks that agencies are here to protect us. Talking heads paid tens of millions of dollars a year like to say how corporations create jobs and how they need less regulation, tax breaks to create jobs, which will spur economic growth. Agribusiness proved that jobs were cut by the hundreds of thousands while profits lined a few pockets. The health of humans, animals, and the earth be damned. In 2017, 9 years after Engdahl's book was published in 2008, CAFO practices are even worse. In October of 2017, news reports emerged about the Gulf of Mexico having a massive dead zone, which is where nitrate pollution, brought on by the factory farming, causes massive pools of algae that use up all the oxygen, choking fish and wildlife to death. Now, curiously, the pollution stems from factory farming for corn and soy used as animal feed. The Midwestern toxic runoff finds its way into the Gulf of Mexico, creating the algae blooms. Tony Enns, a Wisconsin farmer protesting Tyson Foods in Chicago, told DePaul University's DePaulia, "Our town's water test helped me understand why my wife and several of our children had frequent unexplained headaches, a result of high nitrate content. I understood why a number of our ewes and does had miscarriages every spring, another symptom of nitrate poisoning." Enns explains how millions of gallons of liquid manure within 2 miles caused nitrate levels in his town water to be 20 times higher than the EPA standards allowed. Even the National Cancer Institute admits that nitrates in water are linked to cancer in animals and humans. Studies have shown increased risk of colon, kidney, stomach cancer among people with higher ingestion of water nitrate and higher processed meat intake compared with low intakes of both. A dietary pattern that results in increased NOC formation. Other studies have shown modest evidence that higher nitrate intake can increase the risk of thyroid cancer and ovarian cancer among women and elevate the risk of pancreatic cancer among men and women. Sodium nitrates are also used to cure meats. And what have we seen? Just about every other day, somebody's dying of pancreatic cancer, aren't they? Vitamin C is well known to help reduce nitrates in the diet, but you won't hear any talking head telling you to take vitamin C. In fact, the powers that be continue to wage a war on even supplements. We'll take the break, come back on the other side and finish this. And if we have any time left, we will take some more calls as well.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website, by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Do you or a loved one suffer migraine headaches? Listen to what scientist Kurt Hendricks has to say.
35 million people in the United States suffer with debilitating migraines. If you or a loved one are one of them, you need to know about MigRelief. Hi, I'm Kurt Hendricks, the scientist that formulated and patented the MigRelief migraine formula. MigRelief is a non-prescription dietary supplement recommended by neurologists, pharmacists, and pediatricians to address nutritional deficiencies in both adults and children over 2 with migraines. Try MigRelief for 3 months and see the powerful difference it can make in your life, or get your money back, no questions asked. Go to MIG911.com or call 800-MIG-7354. You can change your life today.
So if you suffer from migraines, don't wait. Call 800-MIG-7354. That's 800-MIG-7354. Or visit MIG911.com.
No presidential administration in the past several decades has done much to force the EPA to take action against large agricultural and other polluters. The latest is making it much easier for food polluters to thrive. In the 1970s, Argentina was on the radar for a massive GMO experiment and takeover by the Rockefeller family and related agribusiness cartel. Unless one is well-versed in global politics, it may come to a surprise how countries are taken over by powerful economic forces. In the U.S., the media, which is owned by these powerful interests, tell us that a certain country, dictator or whomever it is anti-U.S. and needs to be overthrown to protect the security of the U.S. What this often means is simply that specific business interests are either threatened or need to dominate that country's resources. This is nothing new. For instance, a U.S. Marine General, Smedley Butler, his confession on October 21, 1931, made plain how he was a gangster for capitalism. General Butler stated that he helped in the rape of a half a dozen Central American republics for the benefit of Wall Street. This is not something most Americans like to hear. People haven't heard of Butler. They may not know he was one of the most highly decorated Marine Corps generals in U.S. history. As truthful as this confession was, It came after he did these dirty deeds, and no one was brought to justice as a result of General Butler's confession. Now, there are many circumstances which brought Argentina under the grip of agribusiness, political instability against the Perón regime, which was likely fomented by Rockefeller, increased debt due to the 1979 Federal Reserve interest rate hike, which, by the way, oh, they had all kinds of money for these countries, and then when they're having a little bit of problem paying it back, well, we just up the interest rates. What do you got to trade out in lieu of that cash loan? Now, Ingdahl states before the Rockefeller cartel takeover, up to the beginning of the 1980s, Argentina had been remarkable for the standard of living it provided its population. The agriculture system, partly as a result of Juan Perón era, was diverse, productive, and dominated by small family farms. A typical Argentine farmer in the 70s would raise a small amount of crops, such as vegetables or wheat, husband a small poultry, a dairy herd, and occasionally beef cattle on a small plot of land, which was held over decades by right of possession. Argentine beef quality was so high that in the 1970s, it outvalued the Texas beef, beef of the world's highest standard of quality. Up to the 1980s, the rich land and farm culture typically produced large surpluses beyond domestic food needs. Significantly, government farm subsidies were non-existent, and farmer debts were at an absolute minimum. Engdahl explains what happened to Argentina in those in thorough detail. It should come to no surprise that Kissinger, at the behest of the Rockefellers, supported the bloody overthrow of Perón in 1976 by creating a phony communist and terrorist threat. As documents reveal, Rockefeller paid Argentinians posing as terrorists were trained by the U.S. Pentagon in the notorious U.S. Army School of the Americas. According to Engdahl, not only was it later learned that Kissinger and Rockefeller approved, but in fact, Rockefeller suggested key individuals be targeted, and at least 15,000 intellectuals, labor leaders, and opposition figures disappeared in the so-called Dirty War, according to Engdahl. Starting with the 1979 U.S. Federal Reserve 300% interest rate hike, as well as the dependence on Rockefeller oil, Argentina faced a debt crisis and had to accept neoliberal free trade, as well as the IMF austerity. Ingdahl explains, in effect, as a consequence of the economic crisis, millions of acres of prime farmland were put up for auction by the banks. Typically, the only buyers with dollars to invest were foreign corporations or private persons. Small peasant farmers were offered pennies for their land. Sometimes when they refused to sell, they were forced off their properties by terrorist militia or by the state police. Tens of thousands more farmers had to give up their lands when they were driven to bankruptcy by market flooding of cheap food imports brought in by the free market reforms imposed by the IMF. Argentina never grew any significant amount of soy before its debt crisis, only 9,400 hectares in the 1970s after 4 years of adopting Monsanto's soy seeds and agribusiness techniques. In 2000, Argentina's soy production had over 10 million GMO soy hectares. By 2004, she had 14 million hectares. Now, Ingdahl explains that for more than a century, the Argentinian farmland, especially the legendary Pampas, had been filled with wild fields of corn and wheat among green pastures grazed by herds of cattle. Farmers rotated between crops and cattle to preserve soil quality. With the introduction of soybean monoculture, the soil leached of its vital nutrients required even more chemical fertilizer, not less, as Monsanto had promised. The large beef and dairy herds, which had roamed freely for decades on the grasslands of Argentina, were now forced into U.S.-style mass cattle feedlots to make way for the more lucrative soybean. Fields of traditional cereals, lentils, peas, green beans, had already almost vanished. Now, what happened was tragic. A leading Argentine agroecologist, Walter Penge, a specialist in the impact of GMO soybeans, predicted that if we continue in this path, perhaps within 50 years, the land will not produce anything at all. Now, Mr. Pengru may be generous in his thinking the land will last 50 years. What is left after the U.S. plunders a country to support agribusiness? In 1970, before the takeover of those living below the poverty line was 5%. By 1998, it was 30%, and by 2002, it was 51%, with malnutrition at 11 to 17% of the total population by 2002. Now, to rub salt in the wound, the Argentine government, beholden to agribusiness, gave poor people soy foods and chastised their previous diet of dairy and meat protein, which was likely extremely healthy from their nutrient-rich soils. Of course, they weren't told that soy protein diets bring on many different types of health maladies, from allergies to cancer because of the soy's unusually high trispin inhibitors, or trypsin inhibitors, pronounced correctly. Argentinian debt skyrocketed under the Kissinger Rockefeller neoliberal free market, the privatized economy. Foreign debt totaled $198 billion in 2003, three times of that under the puppet Carlos Menem. That's corporatism on steroids. Now, Argentina suffered a health crisis from the massive use of glyphosate and GMO seeds. In 2010, journalist Claire Robertson, who wrote in an article titled Argentina's Roundup Human Tragedy, in 2002, 2 years after the first big harvest of Roundup-ready soy in the country, residents and doctors in soy-producing areas began reporting serious health effects from the glyphosate spraying, including high rates of birth defects as well as infertility, stillbirths, miscarriages, and cancers. Environmental effects include killed food crops and livestock and streams strewn with dead fish. Now, one of the first medical doctors to report problems in the glyphosate spraying of genetically modified food, or soy in particular, was Dr. Dario Gianfalitti, I think his name is pronounced, from Cerrito, Argentina. According to this gentleman, there are two levels of toxic effects from glyphosate: acute effects such as vomiting, diarrhea, respiratory problems, and skin rashes, and chronic effects which take 10 to 20 years to show up. These include infertility and cancer as well. He also said, our town experienced drastic changes before and after soy. I've seen people die from cancer at the age of 30. I have witnessed pregnancy problems and significant increases in fertility problems. I have seen an increase in respiratory diseases, as has never been seen before. GM soy has been a death sentence for humans and for the environment. No money can compensate for the damage that has been caused, the contamination, the deaths, the causes of cancer, and malformations. Reports of birth defects in glyphosate-sprayed areas of Argentina gained scientific credibility in 2009 when senior Argentine government scientist Professor Andres Carrasco went public with his research findings, fully published a year later, that glyphosate causes malformations in frogs, chicken embryos, at doses far lower than used in agriculture spraying. The findings in the lab are comparable with malformations observed in humans exposed to glyphosate during pregnancy. I suspect the toxicity classification of glyphosate is too low. In some areas, this can be a powerful poison. Now, at a recent conference, the professor and the director of the Laboratory of Molecular Embryology, University of Buenos Aires Medical School, and lead researcher of the National Council of Scientific and Technical Research, said a frequent result of malformations in human embryos is miscarriage. He said that it is now not unusual for women in GM soy-producing regions of Argentina to have up to five miscarriages in a row. Now, the research findings of this gentleman and his colleagues were not welcomed by some sectors of government and industry. Well, one can imagine. After he announced them, four people from Argentina's Crop Protection Trade Association were sent to try to search his laboratory, and he was seriously told off by Lino Baranao, Argentina's science and technology minister. Now, things took a violent turn in 2010 when organized mobs of thugs attacked people who gathered to hear his talk. Three people were seriously injured. Carrasco and a colleague shut themselves in a car and were surrounded by people making violent threats, beating the car for hours. Witnesses said the attack was organized by local officials and a local rice producer to protect the economic interests behind local agro-industry. Amnesty International called for an investigation. In an article titled Pesticides, Illness Triggers Anti-Monsanto Protests in Argentina, Deutsche Welle wrote this. He said, Monsanto pesticides are causing birth defects and cancer in Argentina. According to a new report, in farming community near Córdoba, residents say that they have been poisoned by pesticides. Sofia Gattica sits in the sun on a cafe patio in the Argentine city of Córdoba. She talks about raising her three children in a suburb of Córdoba, surrounded by soy fields. In the mid-1990s, her oldest son became extremely ill. When he was 4 years old, he came down with the illness that left him temporarily paralyzed. He was admitted to the hospital. They told me that they didn't know what was wrong with him. Now, the Gattica family lived just 50 meters from the fields planted with genetically modified soy. Planes regularly flew overhead, spraying the plants with the herbicide glyphosate. Slowly, the entire suburb started getting sick. Children were being born with deformities. Little babies were being born with six fingers, without a jawbone, missing a skull bone, with kidney deformities, without arms, and a lot of mothers and fathers were developing cancer themselves. In 1999, Sofia Gattica gave birth to her fourth baby, a little girl. 3 days later, the baby died of kidney failure. The loss of her child prompted Gattica to take action. She decided to find out what was happening in her neighborhood. I went door to door and did a survey asking each mother for the sick person's name, address, clinic, everything. And each mother sent me to another, and so on and so on. And there were major health consequences. Soon, Sofia Gattica was joined by others. The mothers themselves started to come help me, to tell me, look, I have another sick person. They came to me by themselves and decided to join the struggle. The group named themselves the Mothers of, and I hope I don't butcher this too bad, Ituzaingó, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. They took their survey to the government and demanded the immediate investigation. In 2002, the government agreed. The results were alarming. The area's water supply was polluted, and 80% of the neighborhood's children had agrotoxins in their blood. Around this time, a doctor at the University of Buenos Aires, Andres Carrasco, proved that in the herbicide glyphosate can cause birth defects in vertebrates. In most cases, the fetus dies before birth because of deformities, he explained. The inhalation or the introduction of these agrotoxins kills the embryo. Now, according to a new report from the Associated Press, there are similar cases being recorded across Argentina. Monsanto herbicides and pesticides are drifting into residential communities, seeping into water sources. Farmers are using the chemicals without proper protective gear, and discarded pesticide containers are being used to store water and other farm goods. The report signals growing concern among doctors who warn that these chemicals may be the cause of rising cancer rates, birth defects, respiratory illnesses. cancer rates in Santa Fe are reportedly 2 to 4 times higher than the national average. In Checo, birth defects quadrupled in 10 years after biotechnology for improving crop yields was introduced. Argentina wasn't the only target. Many other countries worldwide were similarly coerced, but there's no other example other than, like, Iraq. The industry and the history, I'm sorry, let me back up here. The history of Iraq's agriculture dates back 8,000 BC. That's when the Mesopotamia, a fertile land between the Euphrates and the Tigris rivers. What isn't well known is that Iraq was the center of seed cultivation, thousands of years of seed collection. Remarkably, virtually every variety of wheat were stored in Abu Ghraib, Iraq, known as being the infamous U.S. torture prison. Abu Ghraib was bombed out during the U.S. invasion, but fortunately the Iraq Ministry of Agriculture took the precaution of creating a secure backup bank of those historically precious seeds and sent them to, of all places, Aleppo, Syria, which became noteworthy after Engdahl wrote Seeds. It was Aleppo that suffered the devastations of war from 2012 to 2016. When George W. Bush spoke of planting seeds of democracy, Engdahl sarcastically writes that few realized that he had Monsanto genetically engineered seeds in mind. Now, everyone knows that the U.S. invaded Iraq in 2003, but what is not well known is how the U.S. took complete dictatorial control over the Iraqi economy, which was run out of the Pentagon, headed by Paul Bremer. Bremer was put in charge as administrator of the newly created Coalition Provisional Authority. Engdahl writes that Bremer's first act was to fire 500,000 state workers, most of them soldiers, but also doctors, nurses, teachers, publishers, printers. Next, he opened up the country's borders to unrestricted imports, no tariffs, no duties, no inspections, no taxes. 2 weeks after Bremer came to Baghdad in May of 2003, he declared Iraq open for business. He did not say whose business, but that's becoming increasingly clear. Iraq had 200 state-owned businesses that provided many goods and services which were privatized, resulting in the largest state liquidation sale since the collapse of the Soviet Union. With a stroke of a pen, Bremer had complete dictatorial authority over the devastation brought by the 2003 invasion and previous years of sanctions and depredations. Curiously, Order 81 made certain that GMO seeds would receive patent protection, allowing U.S. corporate GMO monoliths to have absolute rights over the use of their seeds in Iraqi agriculture for the next 20 years. Prior to Order 81, Iraq didn't recognize patents on seeds or life forms on plants. Having confusing legal mumbo-jumbo, Order 81 effectively turned the food culture of Iraq over to the global multinational private companies. Hardly the liberation the Iraqis fought for, according to Engdahl. Yeah, I'd say so. DC insiders allege that Monsanto wrote Order 81. Engdahl notes that unlike other national laws and intellectual property rights, Order 81 was not negotiated by the World Trade Organization, which is bad enough. Rather, they were imposed by Washington on Iraq without debate. And I do not see what the World Trade Organization would have anything to do with the sovereignty of a country and keep your hands off my damn seeds. Why do we need a world system for anything? My thoughts, not the authors of this article. Now, what could be worse if something only an early 20th century science fiction writer could have imagined? Terminator seeds would commit suicide after one harvest season. Terminator technology will allow the already monopolistic plant companies to have almost complete control over agriculture. As Engdahl writes wryly, No longer would they need to hire expensive detectives to spy on whether farmers were reusing Monsanto seeds. And of course, these seeds are patented and considered intellectual property as recognized by the U.S. Supreme Court rulings as well as the World Trade Organization. The importance of the Abu Ghraib seed bank cannot be overstated. Thousands of years of cultivation and knowledge are contained in those seeds. They are literally the life force of nature which has fed our ancestors. We have briefly described the politics of agriculture in this article, and again, we highly recommend Engdahl's Seeds as a riveting account of the takeover of our food supply. We do not believe that these seed monopolists won't rest until they're able to wipe out every non-patentable, non-GMO plant form on this planet. But we here at Carotech will oppose them every step of the way, and so should all of our customers and supporters. Wow. I'm glad I did that article. Yes, that is from The Politics of Agriculture by James Spronius. I'll spell that S-P-O-U-N-I-A-S. And Carol, C-A-R-O-L-E, Carol Valentine. The Politics of Agriculture, How a Select Group of Corporate Powerhouses Commandeered the World's Food Supply. And thank you, Mr. Schwartz, for sending that in. That's been sitting here on my desk to the left of me. And every day I come in here, I stare at this. I knew the article was lengthy, but lo and behold, John B. Wells had to go to the doctor today. So we're going to reschedule him out for hopefully next Friday or any day but Monday. So we'll see what happens there. All righty. How much time we got left, Mikey? Excuse me. How much time we got left? 2 minutes. Thank you. Anybody waiting in the wings? All right. We'll take one call here, I guess. Bill in Wisconsin. Hello, Bill. He's looking for Kelso. Okay, whatever. With your face buried in that computer, that was a little janky, don't you think? All right. At any rate, folks, I know that Steve Elkins will be with me Monday. Ron McDonald will not. Folks, the last time he was in the hospital a couple of weeks ago, they wanted to send him home, not treat him at all, and take the pharmacological route, I guess you could call it. But they did the stents in one side, restored blood. Hopefully they'll be able to do that on the other side. But if they do any surgical procedures with his kidneys the way they are, quite frankly, it could kill him. So please do me a favor, make a note, and do not forget. Send an email around. Hurry up, get well. You can't go anywhere until you do your second book. Anything that you want to say to the guy. One of the nicest human beings I've ever met in my entire life shuffling around on this mortal coil. His email address is ron364@gmail.com. Blow up his email account, folks. I want to thank you for being here today. Back with you Monday with another edition of the National Intel Report. This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $500? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsight.com to make it happen. May 5th is the last day you will hear this offer on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell five.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.